The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by a comic shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with generous support of listeners like you. For more Nerdy Show podcasts, community forums, and to learn how you can support this and other fine Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, from the borough of Queens, in the city of New York, this is the Epic Podcast with your hosts, Nelson Lugo and Schaefer, the Dark Lord.
Ladies and gentlemen, coming to you from the beautiful and spacious Studio 6C in Astoria, Queens, this is the Epic Podcast, episode 47. I am your host, Schaefer the Dark Lord. Hello? Hello? Is anyone there? I'm the only one here. I'm seriously the only one here. Oh. Hey, buddy. Guest canceled. I'm gonna be about an hour late. Start without me, LOL. So I guess I am your only host for the first half of this month's episode, at least. Hey folks, how you doing? Happy October. Lugo will be joining us shortly. I don't know what to do without him here. I guess I'm just gonna roll with it. Normally on this show we talk about Batman, but there's two of us, so now there's one of us, so maybe one of us will talk about Batman. I know the last month we tore apart everything that DC has offered us in terms of Batman entertainment this summer, and there was one thing that slipped under my radar that I managed to catch up on since last month's episode, and that was this. Telltale Games, the studio that creates the QuickTime event-based games such as The Walking Dead, The Wolf Among Us, Back to the Future, etc., has released a Batman game, or rather the first chapter of an ongoing series of a Batman game. Now, like their other offerings, this is a game where you make decisions on the fly, and your decisions have consequences later on down the road. I loved The Walking Dead games, or rather, I loved the first season of The Walking Dead game. I thought the second season of it was a bit lackluster, and the third unofficial season, which was just a Michonne mini season, I thought was very disappointing. Didn't play The Wolf Among Us, didn't play Back to the Future. But I loved their format of these choose-your-own-adventure books, basically, for their video games, at least for The Walking Dead. And now we have this format for a Batman game. Less hands-on action than the Arkham games, but still with the storytelling that we've come to trust from Telltale. I don't like it. I'm just not crazy about it. I like the story of it. At the core of it, there's a good story, but I didn't feel like it was interactive enough for something that is Batman, which is typically associated with action. Sure, you make decisions, and sure, we're at least told via text prompts that these decisions are going to have consequences down the road, but I never felt the urgency in them. Now, I feel this works for something like The Walking Dead, especially because the Telltale Walking Dead games exist in the same universe as the comic books, not the television show. And the comic books aren't necessarily about action. They're more about hard choices and terrible, heart-crushing tragedy. And it works in those games. You have to make quick decisions about who's going to get to eat with the few supplies you have. Who's going to get to live or die in a tense situation? Which character are you going to lie to sugarcoat the terror that is coming? And I feel it works, and I've felt wrapped by those. But in the Batman game, I don't feel like the decisions have much heft. Now, at the center of it, there's a great story. And I felt the whole time, I wish I were just watching this story in an animated feature or reading this story in a comic book. It's great. The interactive parts are too spread out so that I feel that I'm watching a cartoon where I'm periodically interrupted and have to be involved in the game. Or I feel like I'm playing a video game that is broken up by extremely long cutscenes. It's not great, but I do like the story that's going on, and because I'm a sucker for Batman, much like Lugo, my absent co-host, I will probably check out episode 2. And then I'll decide if I'm going to stay on board for the rest of the season. Now, if you like those choose-your-own-adventure-type stories that are mostly based on quick time events that have chains of events that are based on the decisions that you make, I would strongly recommend a 2-year-old horror video game for the PS4 called Until Dawn, which I recently started playing. It is a video game that kind of explores all of the tropes of horror slashers of the 80s. You play as a group of teenagers, alone, at a cabin, in the mountains, isolated, it's winter, and a crazed killer is coming around and picking them off one by one. But in this game, you feel like your decisions have some consequence. You can tell when a character leaves the story that you have made a choice that has permanently affected your gameplay experience. It also, the action portions of the game feel more urgent. I feel more invested in those. I'm on the edge of my seat playing this game to see what's going to happen next, and my controller is gripped tightly in my hands because I know that there is going to be a very sudden quick time event that comes. It's very reminiscent of the game Heavy Rain, which came out for the PS3 several years ago, a game that I adored, and it's got that kind of feel, and it's a great game to get you in the spirit for the Halloween season. So Until Dawn, check it out. It's a great deal of fun. Telltale, the Batman game, maybe take a knee and wait until a couple of middle-aged dicks that record a podcast that you listen to weigh in on the conclusion of the season. All right. That killed a few minutes. That's definitely not going to fill a segment. What else can I do? Oh, I can talk about this. I recently completed work on a short film / music video entitled A David Lynch Movie that is the directorial debut of Francine the Lucid Dream, a previous guest on the podcast. Now, I say short film / music video because it's kind of a throwback to those long-form music videos of the 80s, like Michael Jackson's Thriller. There was a short version that MTV would play in rotation that was just the song, but of course the long version, directed by John Landis, was a great deal longer, and there was a narrative that occurred before and after and even in the middle of the actual song. What happened is Francine the Lucid Dream is the producer of the Pink Room Burlesque, and she produces those David Lynch-themed burlesque shows that I frequently host. She's done burlesque tributes to Blue Velvet, to Wild at Heart, and a lot of burlesque shows based on Twin Peaks, including an annual Miss Twin Peaks pageant. When I started hosting these shows years ago, I wrote a song that could be the theme song for her show that I could perform at the top of every show, entitled A David Lynch Movie, which is available on my Bandcamp on a free album of B-sides and remixes and covers called Junk Drawer. Now, Francine has always talked about making a music video for this song and thought it would be fun to get the members of the Pink Room cast together and have them actually play out scenes from David Lynch movies and play the characters that they play in the burlesque shows. Well, we started shooting this over a year ago, but the project got bigger and bigger, and there was just too much footage to shoot to make a 4-minute music video. So it turned into a short film in which a music video happens. Yes, though the song is 4 minutes long, the music video short film is 20 minutes long. And it's a great piece, and it's a very impressive piece of work for a first-time director. This film debuted this weekend at the Coney Island Film Festival and was met with great pleasure and joy by the audience that was in the screening I attended. There's also a fundraiser going on. Francine has launched a fundraiser to get the film finished and get it submitted to more film festivals before it is released online to the public. So if you're on the internet, you're going to have to wait a little bit to see it, but it will be in circulation doing the film festival circuit in the coming months. I wish I could show it to you, but I can't for two reasons. One, it hasn't been released. Two, this is an audio-based program. But just trust me when I say that it's excellent. I wear a number of costumes. I believe I portray at least 9 different characters in this film with a very unsettling and creepy narrative. It's really something. Since I can't show it, I guess I can plug the Pink Room's next show, which is going to be Saturday, October 8th at the Parkside Lounge in New York City. It will be a burlesque tribute to Mulholland Drive, David Lynch's 2001 masterpiece. And in fact, the show coincides with the 15-year anniversary of the release of Mulholland Drive. I love this film. In fact, the first show I ever hosted for was a Mulholland Drive-themed show, which was done back in 2010. And she hasn't done Mulholland Drive since then. Her show has grown, developed an audience, developed a bigger cast, bigger and better production values. But she hasn't revisited Mulholland Drive, and now she's going to do it in honor of the anniversary of the release of the film. It's going to be great. There are going to be burlesque acts based on the characters of Betty and Rita and the man behind Winkies. And I will be hosting as Adam Kesher, Justin Theroux's character in the film. You know, a podcast is a difficult place to try to promote live entertainment or video entertainment, since this is all audio. So since I have nothing else to do, perhaps to get you excited in the event that you will be in the New York City area on Saturday, October 8th, we'll try something like this. Now, this is the scene where Adam Kesher, the young hotshot Hollywood movie director in the film, he is trying to make a movie, and he keeps being met with setbacks. Early in the movie, he has an intimidating meeting with a pair of pushy producers who are telling them who he has to cast in his film. And when he disagrees and smashes up their limousine, he discovers that all of his bank accounts have been frozen. He also discovers that his wife is cheating on him with the pool boy, Billy Ray Cyrus. And he goes into hiding to a flophouse hotel in downtown Los Angeles. From there, he contacts his assistant, Cynthia, who tells him that, yes, he is broke because all of his accounts have been frozen, and that she has received a message from a mysterious person calling himself the Cowboy, who wants to meet with Adam to sort out this little problem. This little problem being his resistance to the studio's pressure. Tonight, the Epic Podcast Players would like to present to you this scene from Mulholland Drive, a scene between Adam Kesher and the Cowboy. Howdy. Howdy to you. Beautiful night. Yeah? Sure want to thank you for driving all the way up to see me from that nice hotel downtown. No problem? What's on your mind? Well now, here's a man who wants to get right down to it. Kind of anxious to get right to it, are you? Whatever. A man's attitude goes some ways, the way toward how his life will be. Is that something you might agree with? Sure. Now, did you answer because you thought that that's what I wanted to hear? Or did you think about what I said and answer because you truly believe that to be right?
I agree with what you said. Truly.
What I say.
That a man's attitude determines to a large extent how his life will be.
So since you agree,
You must be a person who does not care about the good life. How's that? Well, just stop for a little second and think about it. Can you do that for me? Okay, I'm thinking. Nah, you're too busy being a smart aleck to be thinking. Now I want you to stop being a smart aleck and really think. Can you try that for me? Look, where's this going? What do you want me to do? There's sometimes a buggy. How many drivers does a buggy have? One. So let's just say that I'm driving this buggy, and if you fix your attitude, you can ride along with me. Okay. I want you to go back to work tomorrow. You were recasting the lead actress anyway. Auditioned many girls for the part. When you see the girl that was shown to you earlier today, you will say, "This is the girl." The rest of the cast can stay. That's up to you. But that lead girl is not up to you. Now, you will see me one more time if you do good. You will see me two more times if you do bad. Good night. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Wow, this is a lot more difficult than I thought it was going to be. You know, and it's not just because my co-host isn't here. It's also because I just came to work in a shit mood today. I mean, I'm frequently angry. But I had anticipated discussing what's making me angry with Lugo tonight. But he's not here, so I guess this is as good a time as any to introduce a new segment that we like to call What's Got Schaefer Angry?
What's Got Schaefer Angry?
Facebook arguments. When social media first entered our lives, it was a 21st century means to share information and connect with our friends. In the years since its arrival, it's devolved into little more than a device that allows us to fight with strangers about politics and movie trailers. Fighting online is as old as the internet, but Facebook has made it so accessible and easily presentable to an audience that it's become practically compulsory. And a lot of commenting culture has turned into a game of flashcards, with users falling over themselves to be the first to repeat an association already beaten to death by hundreds of others. When I say feminism, you say Tumblr. When I say fedora, you say friendzone. When I say J.J. Abrams, you say lens flares. When a status does launch a comment thread discussion, the debate mostly takes the form of two people with opposing stances on an issue lobbing bias-supporting links and sarcastic memes and insults at one another until one ultimately calls the other a Nazi, with both sides indulging in every logical fallacy they can, from false equivalents to straw men all the while. As an aside, shout out to whoever taught the MRAs the term ad hominem. Now please come back and teach these shitheads what the fuck it actually means. Now, these arguments are never waged with the intent of enlightening the other party or changing minds. That's futile. It's never going to happen. These arguments are done for the benefit of one's like-minded friends who eagerly drop in to throw supportive likes at what they deem the right side of history and deliver validation to the user. Now, to be clear, I am not suggesting that this is an us versus them dynamic, and that my internet detractors are the only ones who do this. I am just as guilty of it myself. When I post a link to anything that includes the name Anita Sarkeesian, I know exactly what I'm doing. I'm dangling bait at the rats in hopes of luring them out of the sewer so that my more eloquent and more woke friends will exterminate them. Now, some avow that social media fights have ruined civil discourse and have poisoned conversations that would otherwise be more productive and thoughtful if conducted face-to-face. However, the people who posture with that position on Facebook are suspect at best and utterly oblivious to irony at worst. Using Facebook interactions as a replacement for human contact is akin to chugging a bottle of Visine as a replacement for vitamin supplements. I, for one, don't use Facebook because I long for human interaction. In fact, these days, The only times when I'm actually eager for face-to-face human interaction is when I'm standing on an elevated platform and or holding a microphone. I mostly just want to be left alone, IRL. And yet, I'm angry. I'm angry that I get so invested in these fights that I take them home with me at the end of the day. That I will spend a subway commute home with clenched teeth, fuming because Kyle in Tennessee thinks that Black Lives Matter is racist against white people. These fights have become like every other drug I've ever abused. They provide an initial rush of euphoria that quickly crumbles into feelings of self-loathing and regret. But I know I'll keep on doing it. And I know that you will too. Because Facebook arguments are irresistible. And they are the fights that everybody keeps trying to win, in spite of the fact that nobody ever has and nobody ever will. And that's why I'm angry.
That's why Schaefer's angry.
So how else can I kill a little time? What do people do when they're alone with a microphone and they are self-indulgent? Oh! I can make a prank phone call! Yes! Yes. Hold on. Who do I have in my phone that I could make a prank phone call to? Who would be the funniest? There are a lot of dead people in my contacts. And a lot of dead friendships. Megaran! I want to make a prank phone call to Raheem Megaran, a.k.a. Random Jarbo. He does have my number, but luckily iPhone has a feature where you can block your number. So now all I have to do is hope that he answers an unlisted number. Let's see what happens. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a prank phone call to Megaran.
Hello? Good evening, sir. With whom am I speaking?
This is Raheem.
Hello, Raheem. My name is Kevin, and I'm calling from the U.S. Department of Weights and Measures. Might you have a moment to discuss daylight savings time?
Schaefer, is this you?
No, this is Kevin from the U.S. Department of Weights and Measures.
Schaefer, seriously? I did not have time for this.
Hello? Damn it.
All right. That was a bust. Luckily, Megaran's a real good sport. Hopefully, he's a real good sport. What else can I do? Think. What else do solo performers with a microphone do that's self-indulgent? Oh! I can tell a story! Storytelling is a very accessible stagecraft. Let me try my hand at that! Most of my stories are, this one time I was so fucked up that ... and I can't finish the story because I was too fucked up to remember the rest of it. I could tell you a story about the time I got hit on by a famous person. And I can say times in the singular sense because that has only happened once. This story is called The Time I Got Hit On by a Celebrity. Maybe we'll have a little ambient sound effects there. Oh yeah, that's nice. This story begins with the same line that opened the Transformers animated feature from the 80s. The year is 2005. At this point, I'd been living in New York for 1 year, and I was living with my girlfriend, who later became my wife, and then later became my ex-wife. And in 2005, we were invited to an engagement party for a high school friend of my ex's. She was living in New York, she was very successful in her field, and she was engaged to a man who was also very successful in his field. And this man, because of his line of work, had a connection to a very famous woman. Now, I've always been somewhat fascinated with the cult of celebrities, so when my ex told me we were going to go to this engagement party, my first instinct was fear, because I was always uncomfortable being around fancy people doing fancy things and always felt out of place, like some dumb, filthy hick who didn't belong there. But at the same time, I was fascinated at the possibility of meeting a famous person. Not even a famous person I was a fan of, per se, but just any famous person is typically enough to get me excited. So we went, and it was very fancy, in a very fancy Manhattan apartment, with very fancy catering and very fancy guests who were dressed very nicely. I was very self-conscious because I was wearing ill-fitting cheap clothes, all I could muster to dress appropriately for something like this. This is years before I started collecting suits, so the clothing that I had was shoddy and modest. So we went, and while we were there, I noticed that the celebrity was not in attendance. But I still tried to make small talk and with other attendees, and basically found myself pretending to be somebody I wasn't just so I wouldn't feel so incredibly insecure about my Oliver Twist-like status among all of these wealthy Manhattanites. And I did a fine job. I passed. I was killing the time and just basically looking forward to this being over so that I could go home. And as I was having that thought, she walked in, and I saw her across the room. I recognized her immediately because I had seen her on television many times, magazines, the internet. I'd seen her picture many times. But there she was, standing in person in this lightly populated party of about 20 people across the room. I tried not to stare and maintained a conversation with other guests and my ex. But eventually, these conversations kind of dried up, and I found myself wandering throughout the room. I made my way to the front of the apartment, where a wall of photographs were displayed from ceiling to floor. And I pretended to lose myself in my own personal analysis of these photographs, where really, I just was pretending to have my attention focused on something so I wouldn't have to pretend to be a social person at this event. I had been looking at a photograph of three women, shot in black and white, posed in such a way that one was on the floor, one was sitting on a chair, and one was standing. I noticed an age difference among all three of the women. And this voice appeared in my right ear and said, "What do you think of this photograph?" And I turned, and I found myself just inches away from the face of the aforementioned celebrity. I believe that this is a photograph of three generations of the same family. I believe this woman here is the grandmother, this one sitting in the chair is her daughter, and the woman sitting on the floor is the first woman's granddaughter. The woman was impressed. She squeezed my elbow and she said, "You are correct. What's your name?" And I told her, "My name is Mark." And she told me her name, which was unnecessary. She said, "Are you having a good time?" I said, "I am having a good time. Are you?" She said, "Well, I just arrived, but I can't stay long. What do you do for a living, Mark?" And I've always had a problem with answering this question. What do I say? I'm a rapper? I'm a comic? I usually just go with, "I'm an entertainer." "I'm an entertainer." "Oh, what kind of entertainment?" She leaned in closer. "Well, there's some music. There's some comedy." "Oh?" She looked intrigued. "Comedy, you say?" "Yes. I have done stand-up from time to time, and sometimes I incorporate it into some of my performances." Before she had an opportunity to ask me a follow-up question, I immediately offered, "Would you like to hear a joke?" I don't know why I did this, because it was met with an immediate, "I would love to hear a joke." She squeezed my elbow again. I raced through my mind, looking over all of my material, which was all kind of narrative-based and situational and didn't really lend itself to a short 10-second gag. Also, it was all pretty horrific material at that time, and I didn't really want to share any of this with her. So I searched my mind for my most favorite joke I'd ever heard. And it was a joke that was told to me by a child, and appropriate for another child. And yet I'd always loved this joke so much, so I pulled it up, rolled the dice, and thought that this might entertain her. I turned to her and said, "What did the zero say to the eight?" She leaned in. "I don't know, Mark. What did the zero say to the eight?" I looked at her. "It said, nice belt." Her hand moved to the upper part of my arm and squeezed a bit tighter. She leaned in and feigned an exaggerated laugh and said, "Oh, ho, ho. Mark, that is very funny." I said, "Why, thank you so much." She said, "So, if you're at the engagement party, you'll be at the wedding then, yes?" "I most certainly will be." And she said, "Terrific. I look forward to seeing you there." And almost as though it had already been planned, she turned toward the front door where a driver was waiting for her, and she left the party. Her last interaction with anybody at this engagement party, for somebody who worked with her, was this nonsense conversation with a child's joke with a poorly dressed stranger near a collection of photographs. She walked out the door and was gone. At this point, I'm just shaking because I was just hoping to talk to a celebrity, let alone feel that I had just been flirted with by a celebrity. I spun around and scanned the room looking for my ex's eyes to see if she had witnessed everything that went down. Sure enough, in a straight path across the room, our eyes met, and she looked at me with a puzzled look and mouthed the words, "What the fuck?" I was kind of proud of my achievement and smugly nodded. Later that night, when my ex and I arrived home, we had a conversation about what had happened again. And this conversation came up that I think happens among couples sometimes, is the list of celebrities one is allowed to cheat with should the opportunity arise. I knew a couple of hers and she knew a couple of mine. And while we reflected over the evening's events at home, I asked if I may add the woman from the party to the list. My ex enthusiastically agreed, saying, "If there's an opportunity for you to sleep with her, you have to do it." So the joke became then that when I went to the wedding in a few weeks, that I would follow up on our little meet cute from weeks before. Now, I'm sad to say that it never happened. The wedding was a huge, extravagant affair with more than 100 guests in a giant, ornate venue. And I never even spoke to her at the party. She did arrive with a date, and there was one moment where she was with a group of friends, and I was talking with my ex and a number of other people in a circle, and my back was to the celebrity. And her date had left her to go get a drink. And she, at some point during her conversation, she turned to one of her friends and said, "Where did my date go?" And of course, my ex and I both heard this, so I leaned over and said to my ex in a joking manner, though keep in mind I have a hard time controlling the level of my voice, especially when I'm drinking, I said to my ex, "Huh, I'm right here." But when I glanced over my shoulder, I realized that the celebrity heard me say that. And the expression she gave me was not one of flirting, but one of disgust. She shuttled off into the party, and that was the last I saw of her. I was mortified that I had embarrassed myself in such a way. Any dreams of consummating this new fantasy that had forged in conversations with my ex disintegrated. But I still always had the story. I still always had the story of the one time I got hit on by a celebrity. I still feel differently when I see her face in media these days. I always wonder what could have been. What could have happened? Say we'd found a secluded place at this wedding, or perhaps a date after the wedding. I don't know. I'll never know. For that wedding was the last time that I ever saw Martha Stewart.
true story.
All right, I've got a scripted bit. I've got my rant corner, prank phone call, storytelling. You know, the only other thing I can think of that is typically associated with solo self-indulgence on a microphone is karaoke. Everybody likes karaoke. I mean, everybody who's performing karaoke likes karaoke. The audience might not like it so much, but what the hell are they doing in a karaoke bar if they don't like karaoke? You know, to hell with it. He's still late. If he's not going to show up, I'm going to do what I want to do. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to perform karaoke because the Epic Podcast has reached all new startling depths this evening. Let's see. What do I have in my karaoke library? No. Oh, The King. Everybody likes The King. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to perform my favorite song by Elvis Presley. And I would like to dedicate this one to my absent co-host, Nelson Lugo.
Treat me like a fool, treat me mean and cruel, but love me. Break my faithful heart, tear it all apart, but love me.
Won't you love me?
If you ever go, darling, I'll be. I'll be sad and blue, crying over you, dear only. I would beg and steal,
beg and steal,
just to feel
your
heart. Sad and blue, crying over you, dear only. I would beg and steal,
we would beg and steal,
just to feel,
yes, just to feel
your heart.
So close to mine.
Well, if you ever go, darling, I'll be oh so lonely, begging on my knees. All I ask is please, please love me. Oh.
Thank you, folks. Thank you. You know, this is just getting obnoxious now. I was certain that he would be here by now, and he's not. And you know, of all of the things that piss me off, this... Oh! That sound means that my co-host is surely here. So we're going to collect him, get him up into the studio, and then he can explain his tardiness. In the meantime, folks, we're going to take a quick break, and we will be back in just a moment.
Wish I could say I see some stranger things. Wish I could say I see some stranger things, but I can't. What in the world is upside down? I don't know, but I must find out. It's not about will, but about our will to survive. I love my town, Hawkins, where nothing happens often. We're afraid to go out walking, hop singing. We need to take precautions. Lights start to flicker, now I think I get the picture. He's on the other side, but still communicating with us. And I'm not insane, but these cats have got a lot to gain. Too many questions, I'ma need you to explain. It's government experiments going wrong. Grab the bolt cutters, cause I need to know what's going on. Hopped on the ham radio, trying to make some contact, hoping to reach Australia, but went beyond that. See, I wanna see 11 win, but can't help but wonder what happened to the other 10. Everything is relative. Yo, they telling lies, abducting kids from birth and running tests until they're weaponized. Meanwhile, two of the brightest kids in town are missing here. Not even in the character to try and disappear. Yeah, Lucas is skeptical, cause some don't last. Making me recall the time back at Bloodstone Pass. We were abandoned like a couple orphans. Now our target is the freaking Demogorgon. Anything is less important. Now I'm sleeping with a gun under the pillow, cautious, cause there's a being on the loose that could murk us. I'm looking for the gate, I'm ready for whatever. Can't let this mind sever, we will keep it together. But there's suspicious trucks on the block, getting rough on the block. Don't even know who to trust on the block. Yeah, no more secrets, everything in the open. Dark places illuminated, my spirits are broken. But I'm in suits interrogating, hating on anyone investigating, hesitating while the troops escaping. But we've been patient, we find the gate and then we trap them. Then we catch them, playing dirty, we going back to the upside down. Cause the answers I must find out, it's different now. Anything I used to trust, I doubt.
I go with strange music, strange, famous and Doctor Strange. But I can't say I've ever seen a stranger thing than the drama, the excitement and the draining pain that we all experienced in these stranger things. I like strange music, strange, famous and Doctor Strange. But I can't say I've ever seen a stranger thing than the drama, the excitement and the draining pain that we all experienced in these stranger things. Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, your co-host on the program this month is a New York City-based magician and storyteller. You can currently catch him co-hosting the Epic Podcast on the Nerdy Show Podcast Network. Please welcome to the program, Nelson Lugo.
Hey, hello, internets. I'm here.
There you are.
There you are, Schaefer, holding down the fort. You fucking hero, you.
You know, I know that interviews aren't typically our
wait, you're interviewing me?
Strong suit, but I think I always start an interview strongly. Uh-huh. I always have like one question, and then it just falls apart.
Right, so it devolves from there.
I've got one for this segment.
Oh, do you? You have an actual question for me?
Just one, and then I didn't write the rest of it.
Okay.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Where the fuck have you been?
This might be a little too sort of inside baseball for our listeners, but the New York City subway system is a sort of a hodgepodge, ramshackle, shenanigan-filled Benny Hill romp. Sometimes the MTA poops the bed, and New Yorkers kind of suffer for it. So
I will agree that the New York City subway system is an endless garbage-scented nightmare. The thing that eventually makes me throw all of my stuff in boxes and flee to literally anywhere else in the world is the MTA and the constant headaches and anxiety that it gives.
It's kind of horrible.
I really, I can't think of a single either person or inanimate entity that I hold more feelings of disdain for than the MTA.
Yeah, at best, it works 75% of the time.
Right.
That
said, I know that you live within walking distance.
Well, I wasn't within walking distance.
Oh, you weren't coming from your place.
No, come on, of course not.
You were coming from one of your secret...
My secret lair.
One of your meetings of the weird secret societies that you belong to that I'm not allowed to know about. Because
yes,
I'm
the
not
dark, the
conjurer.
Dark wizard council, chapter 42.
Well, excellent. You're here though now.
Yes, I'm here. I made it. Yay. We can start the show.
I already did that part.
What do you mean you did the part?
You could just do the "and I am your other host."
Wait, hold on. What do you mean you did the part?
You told me in your text, start without me, and I know you were joking.
That was a joke, moron.
Well, I don't have all night to record and then all night to edit. So I went ahead and got started.
Wait, so you mean to tell me you filled a chunk's worth of material while I was on my way here?
I delivered and recorded the worst 40 minutes of entertainment that this show has ever put online.
Worst? I don't know.
You're not going to get to hear it because we're on a time crunch now. Right. And so after we talk, I'll edit the rest of it and send, and you will just hear it when it posts. But 40 minutes of which I am not very proud.
Okay. I guess I, along with everyone else in the world, will judge you in real time when it drops on Thursday.
That's great. I want you to know this, that whatever you think about what I did for the first 40 minutes.
Okay.
That your opinion doesn't affect me. I don't care what you think about it.
Okay.
I'm swinging for C. Muldrow. If C. Muldrow approves of what I did, I will feel vindicated. If C. Muldrow is disappointed in what I put on the air, then I will feel shame.
Okay. I guess she's like the groundhog on Groundhog's Day. You know, it's like if she sees her shadow, then Schaefer did a bad job.
We threw so many metaphors into that. I threw a sports one in. You threw in a holiday one. It's crazy. It's just crazy.
This show has descended into chaos already.
Yeah.
I guess I'm here. Can we talk about stuff that I'm thinking about?
Yo.
That's wow. Okay. I don't know where to begin. What did you talk about?
I didn't talk about anything.
Okay. So, can I talk about Batman?
Not if you're going to talk about the Batman Telltale game.
Okay. Can I talk about video games?
You can, but not if you're going to talk about Until Dawn.
Can we talk about Netflix shows?
We can totally talk about Netflix shows.
Okay, good. So I want to briefly touch upon the two sort of hit shows right now, which are Stranger Things and The Get Down.
Both Netflix originals.
Netflix originals. Stranger Things, the breakaway hit of the fall, I guess. I don't know. What would you call that? The fall Netflix season?
I think it was the summer. I think it premiered in the summer.
Yeah? Okay. Yeah. So
just a runaway hit.
Just a phenomenon, a cultural phenomenon.
You've surely read the things that were written that the Duffer Brothers, the creators of the series, pitched it to
everybody,
every network they could,
and everyone they can think of.
Everybody walked away from it, and Netflix picked it up and got an incredible, just opened up a treasure chest, and now everybody loves it. People are running to Netflix to subscribe because they've heard so much about it online.
It's a system seller, as they say.
Those kids are all stars now.
I know. All those kids, those kids are fucking world famous now.
They just show up on everything, and every time they do, they're just precious and perfect, and I want them to never grow up because they're going to end up growing up and turning into a bunch of tragic Corey Feldmans.
Ooh.
I want them to stay this age forever because they are perfect and charming and endearing, and everything they do.
Yeah.
I can't get enough of it. I find myself Googling their talk show appearances just so I can hear what.
So this is a perfect example. You have been gaga over this show. You latch onto this show immediately.
Yes.
And you were in from episode one, second one of the first episode you were in.
I was sending you texts halfway through the first episode saying, fix your life.
Yes.
Yes.
Now, I would go so far as to say that a large part of that is like maybe threefold. One, you are a huge, huge lover of nostalgia.
Oh, my God. That's an understatement.
You basically sop up nostalgia with a giant biscuit and gravy kind of meal and then shove it into your gaping maw, hoping you can capture some quintessence of the childhood memories you hold so dear.
Okay.
And then on top of that,
you have a deep, deep cut love for really strange television like Twin Peaks and David Lynch and things like that. And also you love sort of like these suspenseful sort of monster movies.
Yes.
You know, so basically this is the perfect Shape of the Dark Lord trifecta of entertainment. This spoke directly to you. Are the target demographic for this show.
I couldn't be more the target demographic. I mean, if I could just, before you get to the thing you're about to say, I am very, very prone to bits of nostalgia. And I should say fits. I'm prone to fits of nostalgia.
That's actually great.
this show, it hits all of the things that I like. It's got suspense. It's got science fiction, horror, and a bunch of plucky children trying to go against a government agency, whatever. It's got everything that I already love.
Yeah.
But I connect to this show on such a deep level. It takes place in 1983.
Yeah.
Okay.
A very specific time.
1983. It's a group of 9-year-old boys. And let's talk specifically about Will Byers, the child who goes missing early on in the series.
Yeah.
Will Byers is a 9-year-old boy in 1983.
Yeah.
Who is kind of picked on at school because he's kind of weak. And he's just really fascinated by his nerdy interests. He draws pictures of wizards. He plays D&D with his friends. And he's kind of an outcast. And his mom even describes him at times as saying, Will's just kind of sensitive.
Yeah.
Now, Will lives with his single mother, who is working multiple jobs and isn't home a lot because she's trying to support her family.
Sure.
And his older brother, who is about 10 years older than him.
Yeah, much older.
Yeah, he's 10 years. So he's like 19 and 9.
Yeah.
Those are their ages. And they live in a small, rural, Midwestern town.
Yeah.
I was Will Byers in 1983. Like, all of those details, that was exactly my reality growing up. I was a weird outcast who was picked on, and I just lost myself in fantasy and wizards and drawing. And I had a super stressed out mom who was trying her goddamn best to, like, to just take care of myself, my older brother, who was 10 years older than me, and we lived in a small town in Iowa, not Indiana, but close enough.
Well, I mean, yeah, pretty much. Like sort of middle America, small town USA.
Meanwhile, this story goes through hitting notes from E.T. and The Goonies and Poltergeist and basically everything I grew up loving so much that, I mean, the show made me cry a number of times because I guess the nostalgia hits so deep. And I'm not even talking about the emotional sad scenes. Just when they were just building this world and setting the tone, there was just so much about it that was so incredibly familiar to me.
Yeah, it struck more than several chords for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, when I was watching it, I was thinking, oh, I bet Schaefer really got into this moment. I was thinking, oh my God, that's exactly how Schaefer described his small town. And like throughout the whole thing, I was literally imagining you watching it and enjoying my imagined reaction of you watching it.
I mean, the performance of his mother, Joyce Byers, played incredibly by Winona Ryder.
Incredibly.
Came out of nowhere and broke from...
I am so happy to see her doing something that's just a bit outside of what we're used to seeing her do. And she fucking nailed it.
When she is upset and hysterical and just and determined, it was creepy how much it reminded me of my own mom.
Yeah.
Like the scenes where, and then there's like the flashback scenes where he's sitting there drawing and she's like looking at his drawings of the wizards and she's like, those fireballs, they're cute. They kind of look like broccoli. Maybe change the color. I was like, that was how my mom used to just kind of throw me bones every now and then. She'd still give me attention, but she had a lot on her mind and was incredibly stressed out.
Of course. Yeah.
It was just, there's just so much that happened that I related to and then just loved the storytelling.
Well, I mean, you're certainly not alone. I mean, this has become, like I said, a cultural phenomenon, a kind of a runaway hit.
Yes.
And I'm sure it's going to sweep all kinds of awards come next awards season.
The Emmys were like a week ago.
Oh, did they win that stuff?
I don't think so.
Oh. Did they? I guess I don't watch award shows. But be that as it may,
No, what's important about the Emmys is that in the pre-show, yeah, which is now in a video that's gone viral,
sure,
the things that they don't show on the air when they're just entertaining the celebrities or taking their seats,
uh-huh,
that they had like a little musical number where the kids who played Lucas, Dustin, and Eleven came out on stage and performed Bruno Mars's Uptown Funk. I can't love these kids anymore. It was so charming and they were so good. And damn, Lucas can dance. And damn, Eleven can sing. And damn, Dustin is charming.
So there are 8 episodes, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And there is another season on the way.
Yes, there is.
It has been...
I have to say, I liked it a lot. I like Stranger Things a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I have to admit, it took me until like the 4th episode for me to finally get invested and sort of say to myself, okay, now I'm in.
Oh, wow.
It took me a while. For me, it was a very slow burn because... Unlike you, I am not a huge fan of that sort of weird television, Twin Peaks and mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And small town America is, at least for my childhood, quite foreign to me. So yep. I don't really understand.
Probably even frightening.
I mean, the small town America scares me more than the monster in Stranger Things.
I would imagine if you see like portraits of small town America,
yeah,
specifically small town America in the 80s,
yeah,
as a brown person, you're probably yeah. not so psyched about that.
No, not really. White people in large groups make me nervous.
Yeah, we're dangerous.
Yes. So I liked it a lot. I think it took a while for me to really become invested because The show itself is actually pretty slowly paced. It doles out information very measured and in very specific ways. And it's not until the 4th episode where shit really kind of hits the fan and pieces start to come together that were kind of handed out in the first 4 episodes. But it's really in the last final moments of the 4th episode where things start to come together in pieces. And then I remember right at the end of it, I was like, oh, shit. And then I started the 5th episode immediately. And I liked it. I liked it a lot. I'm excited for season 2.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited now that they built this world, like what else they can do with it, considering the twist at the end of Stranger Things, which mm-hmm. I'm not going to spoil here. I'm actually really excited. And all of those child actors are phenomenal. I really fell in love with them I believe that they were friends. I believe that they were buddies.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like right from the start, I believe that there was a history there with these kids. But I guess I don't know. I didn't really latch onto it the way the rest of America is latching on.
I think you're only responding to how vocal and excited everybody has been
yeah.
about it. Like if they hadn't been, you would be sitting here saying, I loved it. I loved it so much.
Yeah.
But because all of your social media has been populated by people just going nuts about it.
Sure.
And your co-host doing it right now, that you have to like qualify it by saying, I liked it, but I'm not as insane about it.
Well, I think in some way that's true because there's another show on Netflix.
Okay.
Called The Get Down.
Oh, which I have not yet started watching.
You and everybody else in America. And that is a really horrible, horrible shame. And look, I don't want to play the race card here, but a show about white people and there's a show about brown people and the show about white people does really well and the show about brown people doesn't do really well. Take that for what you will.
Sure.
You can interpret that however you wish. I know what my opinion is, and I think if it was a show about white people, it would have been a massive success.
Mm-hmm. Well, but it can't be, as it's a show about the history of hip hop.
Right. Which the way you're excited about Stranger Things in that time and place mm-hmm. is the way I'm excited about The Get Down in that time and place.
Oh, because it's the 70s in the Bronx?
It's the 70s in the late 70s in the Bronx.
Where you were a child.
Where I think I was 3 years old when this story takes place.
Okay.
And my mother and father were deep. That's where they lived. This was the neighborhood they lived. This is the neighborhood I grew up in. This is the neighborhood I don't remember because I was too much of a baby to remember because I think we moved because it was a fucking war zone. And so we moved to a better part of the Bronx. But I remember my dad talking about the Bronx burning buildings. I talked, you know, my mom talking about the blackout of the late 70s, you know, and you know, like the Bronx being the birthplace of hip hop and the place where disco dies. And it's just, I grew up with these stories. I grew up in this culture with these people, and everything about this show, just plucks all the fucking chords. I'm not really nostalgic for it because it's a world, it's a neighborhood that I don't have any personal experience in, but I was steeped in it because everyone around, all of my elders around me were steeped in it. And so I just heard story after story after story. And on the radio, I'm hearing the birth of hip hop. I'm hearing all of the, you know, the Get Fresh crew and Roxanne's Revenge and all of these songs. And the thing is, I think part of the reason, well, other than the fact that I think Netflix really dropped the ball in its marketing for it, because they did a huge push for Stranger Things and kind of just like rolled The Get Down out. And
I don't know if I agree with that, because The Get Down has been like a front page recommendation on Netflix for a while. Well, in the same way that Stranger Things was.
Yeah, except that Stranger Things actually got like media marketing.
Okay.
On top of everything else.
Okay.
The Get Down hasn't.
I'm not aware of what Netflix media, like, advertising strategy is, because this was all like word of mouth. It was just like people in my Facebook saying, you got to watch Stranger Things.
Yeah.
And it only been out for about a week, but at the end of a week,
yeah,
everybody was screaming about it.
Yeah.
And then I got invested. And the only reason I haven't watched The Get Down yet, which a lot of people in my social media have been saying, if you're not watching The Get Down, you fucked up.
I think The Get Down, in much the same way that I think Stranger Things is important storytelling, because I will give it that. Stranger Things is doing something storytelling-wise that feels fresh, that feels new, that feels like a new way to tell a story in an episodic form. Mm-hmm. And because it doesn't really have the constraints of the major companies, and Netflix is like, do what you want, and it's like, all right, we're going to do it this way, and it just works. The Get Down, I think, is important storytelling for the exact same reason. These are stories that are not being told. And The Get Down is a little weird, because part of it is historical time and place. Like, these are real places, real people, real events that have happened, right? On top of that, you have this story about these burgeoning artists and who are trying their best to just get out of the goddamn ghetto by any means necessary. And what that means for these people is through music. They want to get out through music. And then there's this layer of fairy tale over everything, because it's done in this very stylistic way. It's almost a musical in its delivery. It's beautiful. I think it's not only just beautiful storytelling, but the way it uses music, both licensed and original, is, I think, quite profound.
When it's using the locations of the Bronx from that time period, does 1520 Sedgwick Avenue play a role in this? Do they acknowledge that? Is that okay?
Yeah.
I mean,
not specifically. Like, it's all of the major hubs of the Bronx are referenced in one way, shape, or form or another.
Okay.
You know, because this was back when the Bronx was sort of cut into slices, and each slice was controlled by a DJ, you know, and, you know, ultimately one of the people that we meet who's a major character in this is Grandmaster Flash, and his sort of like his protege, who I don't think he's an actual person, but it's this fairy tale fantasy story about these kids that could be as real as anyone else in that time and place, in a location that is grounded in historical reality. It's sad. There isn't a happy ending all the time. Shit just goes fucked up, but at the same time, like, you know, they win these small little battles that just mean everything to the story.
Is the blackout of 77 an event that happens?
Oh, absolutely. It's the turning point of it's the start of Act Two, essentially.
How many episodes?
There's a 90-minute episode, and I think there's 6-hour-long episodes.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the reason why it hurt itself, because whereas Stranger Things were small, bite-sized episodes,
yeah,
The Get Down are time commitments. Like, you're sitting down for the very first episode for 90 minutes.
Yeah, you're watching a feature.
Yeah. Okay. And then every episode after that is an hour. So you're committing time to it. And I don't think it does
it's still shorter than Stranger Things.
Yeah, but it doesn't feel as accessible.
I see.
Because when you're sitting down, you are literally sitting down and you're not getting up for a while.
I can say this genuinely, that I have absolutely been meaning to watch The Get Down since I heard about it.
Yeah.
And especially since people have been talking about it and since you've talked to me about it before we started recording.
Yeah.
I have definitely been meaning to, and I got myself wrapped up in Stranger Things, blasted through it, and then that was basically all of the TV time I allotted myself for the month because I had other stuff to do. And I've been feeling guilty about the fact I've been feeling guilty about the fact that I've not yet watched The Get Down, especially right now because I can't discuss it with you, and quite frankly, a little bit racist. And also, as somebody who has made a career out of hip hop and who loves the history of hip hop, prided myself on knowing a great deal of the history of hip hop, that this show is basically was handed to me by the same medium that gave me this other thing that I've been just giving warm, awkwardly long hugs to.
Yeah.
And I haven't given it a shot yet.
No, you know what?
I'm going to watch it. I'm going to watch the first episode tonight.
Look, the beauty of Netflix is that it's not going to go away. You know what I mean? You can watch it tonight. You can watch it a week from now. You can watch it a year from now. It's still going to be there.
I know, but I should have watched it by now.
Yeah, I mean, the good news is that it hasn't been canceled, and they have until next year to either convince Netflix or pitch a second season. I really hope it gets a second season.
Right.
Not because I love it, and I do, and not because I think it's a fantastic story that is worth another season. Because it is, but I think, and then yeah, I guess I'm gonna say it. Representation matters.
Yeah,
this is the first time I've seen a show about brown people living a very specific brown and black life that speaks to me. That isn't. I don't feel less than. You know what I mean? Like I don't I'm not rolling my eyes about, oh, here comes the cartoon Hispanic guy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
These are real people with real problems dealing with it the only way they know how. And, you know, and I just love seeing the birth of hip hop in this point of view and the birth of breakdancing and the birth of, you know, and how the DJ was king. And how that slowly starts to devolve until the MC starts to become the king. And I just love it. I love it. I love it. If this gets, you know, two more people to watch this show, please watch The Get Down, because the more people who watch it, the more secure they can get a second season. And I really want them to get a second season. And just how you love the kids from Stranger Things.
Yeah.
You will love the kids in fucking Get Down.
I'm sure I will.
They are fucking hilarious and poignant and strong and sad and angry and joyful. It's everything.
All right. I'm sold. Like I said, I will watch.
And you don't need to feel bad. And it's not racist if you don't watch it. That's stupid.
Well, no. Look, I carry a tremendous amount of white guilt.
Okay, that's so fair.
I will apply that wherever I need be. But there is no reason that I shouldn't have watched it yet, and
yeah.
I will. I'm not even kidding. Tonight,
okay,
I will watch the pilot.
Yeah, it's got a little bit of everything. It's a nice hodgepodge of storytelling conceits.
Sold. To the old white man from Iowa.
What else? Oh, I do want to talk about this briefly, and then I guess we can wrap up because I was late. But do you remember like 4 or 5 years ago I wrote a children's book?
Yeah,
I may have talked about this online a bunch of times.
Was it a steampunk children's
book? Yes,
I do remember.
Yes, it's a steampunk children's book, and it had a couple of false starts. I tried finding an agent to no avail. I tried finding some illustrators to see if I can self-publish. That also kind of fell through. And then I got cancer, and so that had to be put on the back burner. And so this project has been sort of like in the back of my mind for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
So I've decided that I'm going to brush it off and one more time, in earnest, try to get this thing published. And I'm gonna self-publish it.
Okay.
So I'm going to, I guess I'm going to say this now so we can tee it up, because I'm going to be talking about it nonstop for the next, I guess, year. Pretty soon I'm going to be starting a Kickstarter campaign to fund this children's book, the steampunk inspired children's book called Dr. Cornelius T. Congo, or rather the wonderful steam powered adventures of Dr. Cornelius T. Congo and her bodyguard Maribel.
It's a mouthful.
Yeah, it's a mouthful. I just found an illustrator. We haven't signed off on the contracts just yet, so I can't really announce anything. But I'm a few days from getting a finalized contract and signing it. And once that happens, you will be hearing so much about it.
Well, that's so amazing. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I want to say more, but I don't think I can.
You probably shouldn't.
Yeah. But soon, and for like the next year.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you have kids, or you like steampunk, or you like children's books, stay tuned for all the information you could possibly ever want to get in on the ground floor on this fantastic project.
That's, it's exciting, because I know that this has been stalled for a long time.
Yeah.
And I know it's something that you've wanted to do for a long time. And seeing you taking steps toward actually executing this inspires me to get back to work on a children's album that I wanted to make.
I know you. I was so sad when you said you were gonna basically put it on permanent hiatus.
Yeah, I couldn't find the time for it, and I had other things going on.
Right.
And there's always other things going on. I have to commit things entirely to it because I work so slowly.
Yes.
And I never really did. When I say get back to work, I mean get to work on my children's album. Right. The most I ever did.
Got one done, didn't you?
Oh, I never had any instrumentals.
You just wrote.
I wrote lyrics for one song called Boogers. You know why? Because kids love boogers.
It's true. That story checks out.
You know what happened? Like, when we were kids, there was so much like stuff that was marketed to children that was gross.
Oh, yeah. Like those mad scientist labs with like slime. I mean, even
or you buy like, you could buy like a licorice rat and then you would chew into it and it would ooze like red jelly. Like, do they make stuff like that for kids anymore? They don't make.
Oh, yeah. No, they still make slime and gross edible. And like Teenage Mutant Ninja Toys used to come with a little thing
of
slime.
I feel like they don't make stuff that's quite as disgusting anymore. And I wanted to write a children's record that was all the gross stuff, like a record just about farts and poop and boogers. And I wrote lyrics for a song called Boogers, but that was as far as I ever went. But anyway, yours is actually a thing that is written and is now on its way toward realization. And congratulations.
Yeah, we're out of alpha and we're moving into beta.
That's excellent.
Yes.
I like the part of our show this month where two middle-aged childless men talked about their projects where they're going to create art for children.
Well, I mean, I wrote it initially because my nephew Enzo was a wee little lad, and I wanted to write a story for him that his Uncle Nelson, that he could brag and like, oh, my Uncle Nelson wrote this.
Aww.
And then he's getting older. Like, he's like, you know, starting Little League baseball.
He's got
a
little brother.
You know, yeah, but he has a brand new little brother. And so I'm like, yeah, Enzo's too old for the training. I'm gonna abandon that little asshole. I'm gonna start fresh with the new one, Max.
Tell you what, you write your book.
Yeah,
you get your book published for Max.
Sure,
I'll write my record for Enzo.
Perfect.
This will be a snotty teenager by the time I get it done.
True. I think that's it. Was there anything else I wanted to talk about?
Oh, there's one thing I wanted to plug that I was gonna talk about in the first half that I didn't before you showed up.
Okay,
and that was. I just want to send a shout out to my friend MC Lars, who just released a mobile game.
Oh, right.
Called MC Lars the Video Game.
I have not downloaded yet. Tell me about it.
It is fun. It is a side-scrolling runner.
It's like a nonstop running thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
And you basically you have two. You have a jump and attack button.
Oh, there's battles?
No, but I mean, you have to like, you know, shoot enemies and obstacles and things like those types of things.
Okay,
like in the same way that you shoot fireballs as Mario, like that kind.
Oh,
of
okay,
thing.
Sure.
That kind of attack.
Sure.
But the game is kind of rhythm based.
Oh,
not really rhythm. I mean the levels when you jump and collect instead of coins, they're Nintendo cartridges.
Uh-huh.
But when you jump to collect them,
yeah.
It's timed with the music. And every level, there are 12 levels, and every level is set to an MC Lars song that you actually hear in real time.
Oh, that's
and
clever.
And so when you play the game, you're kind of, you're responding, like you're not playing to the rhythm. The game dictates the rhythm, but
right.
But the action does coincide with the rhythm of the song. And in some cases, especially songs like Guitar Hero Hero that have guitar solos,
sure,
the guitar solos are really fun. It's kind of reminiscent of, I believe you came over and I showed you a level from a platformer game called Rayman's Legends.
Yes.
And every world ends with a musical level,
yes,
where you run and jump and the jumps,
yeah,
and the attacks and everything like coincides with the music.
Sure, sure.
It does that, which is great. The game starts off, it's pretty easy.
So wait, do you play as Lars?
You are MC Lars.
I am MC Lars.
Yes. And nice. Agent Marty, who Marty is a character who is... He showed up in a song on his first record.
Okay.
I believe in a song called Signing Emo.
Okay.
He has captured MC Lars, and he set a bunch of evil record executives after you, and you're going to persevere with your faith and the joy that you feel in your music. It's very fucking MC Lars in that sense. Yeah.
Is it the most MC Lars?
It's so MC Lars that when you select the level,
yeah,
or when you do certain things in the game, there are little voice prompts at you, mm-hmm, that are like little snippets that he,
sure,
recorded of,
sure,
his voice. But like when you select something, like you'll hear MC Lars's voice say, "Are you serious?" And when you finish a level, when you get to the end,
yeah,
and the early levels are kind of easy, it gets really, really hard.
Oh, it ramps up.
But when you finish a level, you'll hear MC Lars tell you, "That was tight."
Oh my God.
And it's so awesome. It gets frustrating because some of the levels later on,
yeah,
are become very, very difficult. And
okay,
so you'll try over and over and over to beat them,
yeah,
which means you'll hear that same song many times in a row.
Ooh.
I don't know how many times I heard Flow Like Poe because it took me like many, 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 many attempts to get past that level.
Is it annoying, or are the songs good enough that it's enjoyable to play?
I mean, they're MC Lars songs, so they're lovable and they're fun.
That's true.
And I still enjoy hearing them.
Okay.
Because I love his stuff. And
all right.
How much is it? Whimsical attitude about things really lends itself to this kind of video gameplay.
Okay.
And his songs showing up is kind of perfect. And if it's got like a mobile game star system, like you can beat a level and get one star, or you can try and go back and beat it,
ooh,
perfectly and get 2 stars or 3 stars.
Nice.
Like you can 3-star every level and you collect stars, you can buy different outfits for MC Lars. which I haven't been able to do yet. I've 3-starred one level.
Uh-huh.
Which
the first one?
No. It was I don't remember which one it was. I think it was Zombie T-Rex. No, wait, Zombie T-Rex is the first level.
Okay.
Oh, I 3-starred Space Game. The Space Game level. But I've gotten 2 stars on a couple of them. It gets really hard as it goes on.
How much?
I think it's $4.99.
That's not bad.
In the iTunes store.
Yeah.
And it's given me way more than $4.99.
That's
for
not bad.
So
that's
far.
Not bad
I
at all.
Like
$4.99 is like the upper limit of what I'm willing to pay for something on the App Store. So.
In this case, it's special too because you know
exactly
the creator. And
exactly.
It's
well, I mean, he's an independent artist. I can only imagine that, you know, as a large chunk of that goes to him, so
yeah,
good for him.
And a large part of the theme is about being an independent artist and trying to make it in the world.
Oh,
look
at that.
It's a lot of fun. I really strongly recommend you guys check
out
MC Lars the Video Game. It's everything you would expect from something called MC Lars the Video Game.
I will download it tonight.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm totally serious.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say that again.
Okay. That's
well, look, so
it.
It's running late.
Yeah,
because
let's
you
wrap
got
this
here
up.
Late. So this
let's
is going to be
up.
A short episode, folks.
All right.
I know you don't care.
No, you don't.
But
or maybe you do. You know what? If you care, shoot us an email at epicpodcast@gmail.com. That's epicpodcast@gmail.com.
Tell us if you like our short episodes, or tell us if you like our half solo episodes.
Do you have anything to plug there, Chappie?
Oh, sure. Let's see. We're doing plugs?
Yeah.
Good. I plugged this in the first half, but I'll say it again. On Saturday, October 8th,
yeah,
I will be hosting the Pink Room Burlesque's tribute to Mulholland Drive.
Sweet.
At the Parkside Lounge in New York City.
Okay.
That's going to be a lot of fun. on Saturday, October 22nd, I will be at Lola's Saloon in Fort Worth, Texas.
What? Really?
Yeah. I'm going to be performing at a mini nerd music festival that is being put on by Beaker, the beloved Beaker, and quasi-patriarch of the Nerdcore family. I am headlining this mini-palooza, along with other acts such as Richie Branson, Crayon Droids, King Phoenix, Lex Lingo, MC Omai, 1UP, DJ Roborob, B2B, Roosevelt, and Wreck the System. That's Saturday, October 22nd at Lola's Saloon in Fort Worth, Texas.
Nice.
And that's all I've got.
Well, I have two things. One, I am doing pub trivia again at a new place and at the same time. Basically, every Tuesday at 7:30, I'm going to be at Wolf Tone in Manhattan. I believe it's in the low 20s. So if you are in New York and are free on Tuesday nights at 7:30, go to Wolf Tone for 5 rounds of general trivia, and I will be handing out prizes as your quiz master for the night. And that's every Tuesday. So go to trivianyc.com for links and more information. But if you just want to experience something really crazy on October 6th, I'm going to be at Green Fairy at the Red Room. This is going to be an absinthe tasting. There's going to be several different varietals of absinthe and some 20s crooning and some burlesque. And I'm going to be in a dark corner doing card tricks and shell games for all of the patrons there. So that's it for me. That's it for you.
Yep.
Anything else?
Nope.
This has been the Epic Podcast, episode 47. I have been your host, Nelson Lugo.
I have been your other host, Schaefer the Dark Lord.
Be safe, internets.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Epic Podcast. We'd love to listen to you, too. So send us your feedback, questions, love mail, hate mail, recipes, and fan fiction to epicpiecast@gmail.com. As listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows on the Nerdy Show Network alive by telling a friend or funding the network via Patreon. Any size contribution gets you exclusive outtakes, episodes, and images from across the network. And there's even more perks available. Just head to patreon.com/nerdyshow. To find out how you or your company can underwrite this or other Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com/sponsorships. If you like what you've heard, please rate and review us on iTunes. Like and follow us on SoundCloud and Audioboom, or subscribe and stream on Google Play. For more podcasts, articles, community forums, and more, visit nerdyshow.com. And be sure to follow Nerdy Show and the Epic Podcast on all of your favorite social networks. If it's geeky, we've got it covered. Yo, Lugo!
Fuck. Yes, Schaefer. Stop. I'm wearing headphones. When you yell to the microphone, you're yelling right into my ear.
Quick question. If you wrote an autobiography, what would you call it?
Oh, man. Tears and Regret, the Nelson Lugo story. Or Clown Noses and Stale Pizza, Nelson Lugo story.
I like the first one better.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Did you have one?
I don't.
Oh.
All I know is that the best title for an autobiography has already been taken, so I don't know what I would ever call mine.
What is it? What is it?
It's Ricky Martin's autobiography.
Oh, okay. Lay it on me.
Well, Ricky Martin, as you know, came to fame as a member of Menudo.
Sure.
And then, of course, forged a very successful solo career.
Of course.
Became a megastar.
Absolutely.
And came out.
Oh, yeah.
And he wrote an autobiography.
Yeah.
His autobiography was just called Me. Now, that by itself isn't so impressive.
No, not really.
But
yeah,
the Spanish language edition of his book is called Yo. That's awesome. It's just a close-up picture of Ricky Martin's face with the word Yo on it. Nobody will ever come up with a better name for an autobiography than that.
You do realize that yo in Spanish means me, right?
Yes.
Okay.